بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. Our namazes are in confined areas. It is not publicized, it is not in an open space, confined to the masjid or whichever place is designated for namaz. The roza is confined to the stomach knows about it, the world doesn't know about it. Then the third farz is zakat. Then zakat generally is not publicized. It is between the giver and the poor recipient. Then the hajj is also in a restricted space, Makkah Mukarrama and its surroundings. So if the world has to see us, they cannot see us. Our namaz, our zakat, our roza, and our hajj is not before them. When it's not before them, then they don't see us in this. Then how and where and when are they able to see us? One poor family had just arrived at the railway station, and they came slightly with a delay. This is about 5 or 6 minutes left for the train to leave. In the meanwhile, they didn't have enough time to go to the ticket office to purchase a ticket, because they came with a delay, and they seemed to be in somewhat pareshani and some worry, some grief and some pain. So the conductor that was for that train, he saw that this is what's going on. There's a family here, there's a couple, and a child or two children, and they are in somewhat pareshani, somewhat worry and disturbance. So he went up. What's the problem? The man explained that it's my mother-in-law, my wife's mother, that has passed away. And we just got the message. As we got the message straight away, we went to book the train. We came in with a delay, so we had to come straight to the platform. Now that we come straight to the platform, we can't board because we don't have a ticket. Now, we're in a pareshani, we're in a problem, and if we don't board the train, we won't make it for the funeral. And then if my wife doesn't make it for the funeral, then she'll never forgive me. It was her mother, and she couldn't attend the funeral of her mother. So what do we do? Meanwhile, they got some saman. They have to board the train, and they have to reach on time. Because the next train that is coming from the same station to that place is coming after 24 hours, after the funeral. So anyway, the conductor that holds like a very senior position in Indian trains, he worked out a ticket at the normal rate and he gave it to them. Then, because there was less time and there wasn't any porter available at the time, so he helped with all the luggages, carried on his own head. Now imagine a person very senior ranking, and he's offering himself to do the most menial work. Potter's work is about the most menial work. So he offers himself to do the most menial work, carries the luggage on the head, directs them to the coach that they have to go to, makes them comfortable. So the man is too excited. So he takes out about 1,000 rupees to give as a token. So this person refuses. So the Hindu wants to know why. So, no, it's all right. He said for the second time, do you accept this? So the conductor, being a Muslim, he says, Musalman, apni neki ko bechta nahi. A Muslim doesn't sell away his good deeds. He's done it, he's done it for Allah Ta'ala. He doesn't want any type of a remuneration. Ma as'alukum alayhi min ajr. Now the Hindu, on his part, he was some type of a government official. Now you have an MP or something of an area, so he had that type of position. Now in his own area he had a big following, a lot of influence. So when he returned, he had a meeting with these people. He says, now I think we need to see the Muslim with a different eye. He is not like what we had imagined him to be. He is something else. See what happened. See my first hand encounter and see what the man has done. So where they will see us, they will see us through our actions, they will see us through our business, our interaction, our socializing, how do we conduct ourselves. This is how they're going to see us. They can't see us in our namaz, they can't see us in our zakat, they can't see us in our hajj, but they will definitely see us in these matters. Umar radiallahu anhu had sent a group with a tabi'in or sahaba or both combined. He sent them to a certain area. Go there and you must live in that area. So they lived for some time in that area, 3 years, 4 years, 5 years, whatever the period may have been. So after that 5 year period, they received another instruction from Umar radiallahu anhu that you must return at once, within 1-2 months, and you must return. Now they packed up and they are about leaving. And this Jewish settlement that these people had settled in, right, big settlement, thousands of Jews living there. So the settlement, they were all in tears, all crying, don't leave, please. If you want wealth, we'll give you wealth. If you want businesses, we'll give you businesses. If you want women, we'll offer you women that you may marry. If you want homes, we'll offer you homes. Whatever you want, you name it, we'll give it to you. We've got enough of all these things. So we'll offer you whatever you talk, we'll give it to you. But please don't leave. Because, you see, this settlement that we are in, that belonged to us once upon a time until the Islamic Khilafat, this place was full of trouble. There was murder here, there was robbery here, there was rape here, there was zina here. There was no peace and security in this place here. There was no respect for the woman here. There was no respect for property and wealth here. There was no justice here. There was total injustice. The wealthy used to eat up the poor. So this was the order of the day. When you came, there was so much of justice, equality, justice, whether the poor or the wealthy. There was no type of indecency and lewd activity in that period. Right? There was no robbery and stealing. There was absolute peace in this area for the time and the duration that you were here. We enjoyed it so much. Our wives enjoyed the period so much. Our children were happy. Now, we are afraid that you will leave and we will relapse. We will revert to our own ways. We know what will happen. The wealthy will eat the poor. Right? there will be no justice here, there will be robbing and stealing here, woman's respect will be going. See? There won't be this type of clean environment that we've enjoyed for 5-6 years. We won't enjoy that any longer. Please remain here. So it is this character, these ways, right, that people observe. They see what's going on, what do you do, how do you conduct yourself. And they draw conclusions from these people here, and these are the ways, these are the mannerisms, this is the conduct. Basically, they observe you in two matters. The world watches you in two things. One is in wealth, how honest you are, how true you are, how good you are in matters pertaining to wealth. Are you clean? Are you considerate? Are you honest? Right. Or are you an opportunist, just want to take advantage of a situation? Robbing, deceiting, deceiving, conniving. This is one thing, one area that they will look at you. And the other area they look at you is lust and temptation. Woman and lust, right? The Mahatma Sabramta says that if you can only control yourself in these 2-3 areas, one is lust. When you look at lust, then this basically 2 areas of lust, right? That people wrong and people they soil themselves. One is woman and the other is young lads, right? So these are the 2 areas people soil themselves. And both are very dirty, very filthy. Both are not right. Whether it is young lads or beardless lads, or it is women. Both are filthy, both have got the effects. Now, in this, where we need to just step up our security is in 2 ways, in 2 areas. The one area is where we have got some influence, right? Like in our own homes, we've got influence, right? You'll see a man going out of his house, he and his wife, and the observing parda, they covered from head to toe. Now, it is to be seen that within the confine of your home, are you observing parda as well? Sometime your cousins are coming in, right? Some relative is coming in. But outside the home, you observed parda and they observed parda as well. Now, inside your home and your immediate people, are you observing any type of parda amongst them also? Or you feel now, yeah, I can be relaxed. What is your position there? See? Generally, it happens that we tend to feel that we don't have to apply the rules of parda within this type of relatives, the cousins, immediate people, sister-in-law, or brother-in-law, or this type of relatives. We don't see the need to apply the rule here. Yes, to strangers, we must apply the rule. But to this type of relatives, then we don't apply the rule. Sometimes we go off here. Right? Sometimes we go off in this manner, that if it's an old person, then too we don't see the need that he should apply the law of parda. We feel now he's old now, he doesn't have those type of feelings like a young would have. So what's the need to observe the rules of parda in the presence of an old person? Whereas we don't realize that it is even more important to observe the rules of parda in the presence of an old person. Because the young person, for him to climax, then it requires a lot of activity. There's a lot of things to come up. He'll climax and he'll find satisfaction. And the old person, you can straight away and go from zero right to the fifth gear, one shot. Doesn't have to look and a couple of glances and all that, and he can get his satisfaction. So the greater need, there is a greater need to observe parda, etc., in the presence of an old person. One pious person, he passed away, very pious, and there were two youngsters, a girl and a boy, that were just near him, living within his own house, maybe a rented apartment just next to his house. And they weren't in marriage, and they were playing around like this. He'd been watching this, he had the strength to correct them and to rectify them. But he preferred just to remain silent, for whatever reason. So he was taken to task after he died. You saw this illicit activity in your own home, right? Where you had influence, right? You had influence, you had some type of power, some type of control. And you saw illicit activity, why didn't you go and correct it? Where you have a little bit of influence, you have a little bit of control, you can correct the situation, you must correct the thing. It's your business, it's your property, and you can see there's something illicit that's going on here. Then you can't allow it to continue. Like in your home or in your business, if someone is too rowdy, right, he's got the radio too loud, very loud, it's blasting, then don't you take exception to it. You're invading. You're invading the peace here. Don't you shout the person, don't you reprimand the person, don't you correct the person that you're invading the peace. So like you will take exception when the person is invading the peace, then you take exception to illicit behavior as well. It's illicit behavior, and you see it before you, then you can't keep quiet. At some level you must speak about it, correct the situation. Now you got, for example, men working for you and women working for you, boys and girls working for you around the same time. So you need to exercise caution in two respects. In the one respect you need to exercise caution is that they don't become too casual and friendly with each other. Right? You've got them and you need them to work. This woman here, this man here, and they don't become too casual, don't become too friendly. Just to the point of work and that's it. They're doing the work and they're going on. Now, here again, we are not careful. We feel, well, that's their own private life and they may carry on in their private life. We don't ask them to behave in a certain manner. We don't ask them to dress up in a certain manner. If they are working for you in your home or in your business, then you have got the right to tell them, this is how I need you to dress. This is how I need you to behave. If it is a woman that is working at your place, then too, you can't give her a carte blanche permission that she can dress and do as she wants. Ask her to dress up like this. Then the next precaution you need to take is that if they need to clean up within the rooms or the toilet, etc., then not at the time that you are in the house. When you're in the house, they mustn't come and clean up. They must do the outside work, either in the kitchen with your wife, or they must do some work that is related to the outside. Nowhere near the toilet, nowhere near the living rooms. Because you are in the living rooms or near the toilet, and your wife is in the kitchen, and Shaitan can instill evil thoughts in your mind. Okay, see, now she's alone here, and the wife is on that side, and you can pull a job this side. So you insist that to your wife, because see, when I am around, she must be in the kitchen or outside, nowhere near where I am. Right? In this way, you will enjoy two things. One is you will enjoy your respect. Now, she will understand also, your wife will understand that this person, he doesn't compromise in these matters. You will enjoy your own respect. Nobody will have any suspicions against you. You won't be tempted to do anything wrong. Right? And number two, the second thing that you'll enjoy is the workers also will begin to respect you. Otherwise, the same workers, if you did anything, you even touched them, or you spoke to them in a sweet manner, then what stops them from carrying this tale to the rest of the world? You know that Cheba, he wears that turban also, you know. But when I'm in the house, then he talks to me and sometimes he touches my hand and all that. Yeah? So they will talk about it. So you see, then you're not going to be advertising for Islam. You're not making tabligh now. Not for deen, tabligh for yourself you're making. If it's your, if it's tabligh now, it's tabligh for yourself. That's why the Thani Sahib Rahmatullah Alayhi used to get upset. See? So there are two sunnats. One sunnat is sunan-e-huda, and one is sunan-e-adiyah. Now these are like sunan-e-huda, in fact, farz. Now sometimes you get so carried away, the turban, and must put that. But now we're talking to girls, not worried about it. That women that are working in the house, we're a little bit free with them, not worried about it. Right? Now that was even more compulsory, even more emphasized, with hadith saying, Al-Hamu Al-Maut, that the brother-in-law is like death. Now the question is, why did the hadith speak about the brother-in-law? Right? The hadith spoke about the brother-in-law specifically, because, see, this type of illicit activity starts off when there is a familiarity. It's a strange woman, then you can't straight away go and get into a relationship. You can't get. It's because it's strange. Now you have to introduce yourself. She must introduce herself. So it takes time before you can get together. But if it is a woman that there is some familiarity, you talk and she's talking and everything is going on, then there is a familiarity between yourselves. Now it is just to strike it, that's all. There was some familiarity. There was some introduction within the both. Now it is just a matter of striking it, just to take advantage over that opportunity. See? So therefore the hadith speaks so much about the brother-in-law. The brother-in-law is death. And the hadith didn't say that the brother-in-law is like death, but it said is death. So the taqeed and the emphasis is even greater, that the brother-in-law is death, real death. See? So don't you experiment with this. You don't know. Your mind works funny. You know, you may be moving straight, but how your mind just takes a turn, how it capsizes, only Allah Ta'ala can protect. At any point, your mind can just turn over. You don't know what can happen to you. So, I'm speaking about this brother-in-law, because just like the brother-in-law, there is familiarity. The one that's working in the house, isn't there a familiarity? The familiarity, and she is, to some extent, she is in need of your help, of your assistance. When she's in need of your assistance, then it's very easy to exploit this. Very easy to exploit, because she's in need of your help. So you're giving something, and you would expect something in return, some favor for a favor. Al-jaza'ul ihsan illa al-ihsan. She's doing you a favor and you want a favor for in return, right? So you have to make it clear to the house folk, see, that when we are around, boys are around, men are around, then she must work outside. She mustn't be anywhere near us. Not anywhere we are, in the living rooms, near our toilets. They mustn't be anywhere around. They must be totally outside. Man's mind works very strangely. He may have a wife and he's enjoying himself, but this thing is such, man is such, he wants a variety. Huh? Let me taste this also. I tasted this one here, let me taste that one. I tasted this achar here, I didn't taste that achar. It may be something additional in that achar that's not in this one here. So your mind works differently. Sometimes it happens that you're a youngster, right? And when you're a youngster and you're not yet married, and these are the things that are in the home, right? When you're not married now you're getting aroused at times. When you're getting aroused at times, then you need to go and offload. When you need to go and offload, then this is the easy place to go and offload, because it's in the house. It's all in the house. Right? So easy. Understand? So your mind works very differently. That's why they say, لِكُلِّ سَاقِتَةٍ لَاقِتْ. The things is all... there's no attraction in it. There's no attraction. But when you got aroused, that your mind worked very funny. Differently it worked. Differently. You don't know how it worked, what it meant and did. You don't know. So this is the one area that you have to be very, very careful. This is in the home. It doesn't only mean in the home. It can mean also in your workplace. Workplace, whether it is a woman that is working with you or she's working under you. You've got the influence over her, right? She's a receptionist or she's an assistant in whatever department, right? She's there. Right? And you are also in the department. Either you're the head of the department, you're the boss, and she's working. So how much do you need to take care of yourself? Or you're in a hospital bed and there's a nurse coming to see you in a private room, right? Now you're sitting there for a couple of days. Can't you get affected? But a man after all, and she's coming and you're all alone. So what happens to you? You have to be very, very careful in this regard. Very, very careful. Exercise, you know, 150% caution. That you don't do anything. You don't get involved in anything. The aftermath of these things are very serious. The beginning sounds very interesting, right? One person came in, not one person, several people came in, right? Came with this problem, right? Young now. When they were young, they went and did all these type of things. In that, they slept with all types, right? Whether it was colored, Indian, black, right? Now, one of them gave birth. One of them gave birth, and the girl, now she insists that that child will be a Christian. Now, presently, as we stand, that girl that he fathered, so, you know, she's the biological father, she's about 17, 18, and she's a staunch Christian. But he has to cough out 10,000 rand every month just for being the father. You father the child, so you must pay the damage. And his that girlfriend warns him that if you don't, then I'll expose you to the press, expose you to the world, expose you to the law. Now, he's living with respect, dari wala, kurta wala, bichara. He's got some respect. And in his youth, he did this. Now, for 18 years, he has to suffer like this. 18 years, he has to suffer like this. You see? What a horrible experience. For the moment you enjoy yourself, you did something, and you appeased yourself, then, for that long period now, you must see that girl in Christianity, you must see all that nonsense taking place, but you can't do anything about it. The law is against you, she is against you, the child leads us there for the good times. They want the money, they've seen the money, and they're enjoying themselves, finish, end of the story. They're not worried about anything else. So the enjoyment is very, very short. But after that, then you have to pay for this. They can blackmail you, they can take you to the law, they can take you to the press, they can take you to the media, they can expose you in front of everybody, anybody. This is a very, very sensitive area. That's why they're saying, Alhamu al-Mut, by its carte blanche, clear message. Okay, this is death. Don't touch it. It's like a live wire, you know, live wire. And you touch the live wire, what happens? It's death, right? So this is live wire. You just touch it and they're gone. When you touch the thing, then that thing won't leave you. You touch it, it won't leave you. Just hold the thing, will it leave you now? Won't leave you. So this thing doesn't leave you. You have to pay. You have to pay your dear life, your wealth. One person came here like that. He was already paying, you know. And she wanted the thing to be just increased. Start off at about, because it's long he started, 3,000-4,000 rand, went to about 11,000 rand. And she wanted an increment every year, because of the cost of living. So I told him, "By move away, please, for Allah's sake, throw your phone, and just your contact people, tell them your new particulars. But you throw your phone away, and you move away." So he went away. So now he's not paying like he used to be paying. But you see the aftermath, the consequence of all this. So I don't know how many people are in this predicament. So many people are in the same predicament. You get into this addiction, and you can't leave it. Like you're sitting and eating, and you have got an addiction of tea. Can you leave that thing? You can't leave it. You have got an addiction of lemon achar. Like, whenever I eat, I want lemon achar. Now, can you leave the thing? It's difficult. So you get into an addiction like this, then to leave this becomes very difficult. So that is why more times you get upset. Now sometimes you get so caught up in the nafil that these things that are sunan and huda, these things we forget about it. Not to say that this is not important. We can't ridicule this, we can't speak against it. But then that's restricting our piety just to this, our good works just to this, then you're missing the whole thing, confusing, complicating the whole thing. These things you're trampling upon, farz, and wajibat you're trampling upon, and that sunan and zawaid, now you're so particular about it. So, the kurta must be slit or not slit now. So particular. But this idea, what you're doing, what your children are doing, oh, there was a case just now, I had to work on a case. So that the family is so worried about a slit kurta and whatever. But in the meanwhile, the children are on the phones. Boy is contacting a girl, girl is contacting a boy. Children are doing this. They're contacting each other. Marriage, before marriage and after marriage, they're contacting strangers, talking to them freely. But now this became like their deen. This became like a big, big, important issue. Someone is doing it very good, but now everything, say, anzilu nasa manazilahum. So, anzil ashya, anzil umur ala manazilim. Everything, put it in its place. It's a top priority, then keep it like that. Second priority, then keep it in its place. But the top priority, you're not worried about it. And these type of things, then we are too worried, over worried about it. Is that the right thing? So I say this addiction, it's difficult to live with this addiction. So you have to insist. Keep talking about it in your homes, in the workplace. Keep talking about it. The more you talk about it, then they will begin to become conscientized. They'll understand, all right? Because women become gullible. See, there can't be any feelings. What feeling? It's my bachu, this one, man. My bachu, how can he feel like that? Huh? They don't realize that bachu also got some feelings. He got feelings also. When he's got feelings, then he will do things as well. So, the areas which are easy accessible for guna, then you will be very, very careful. Prior to marriage and even after marriage, not just prior to marriage, even after marriage, then be very, very careful about this thing. Any strange woman, and you're meeting her, or you're going to see her, and you're going to see her when she's alone, it's very dangerous. You can't go and see her. You can't contact. No, they mustn't be on your phone as well. Sometimes it's just a contact person. But then sometimes she will phone, sometimes you will phone. Sometimes you want good time, and sometimes she wants some attention. Right? And you take advantage. It's over the phone. How many times you get abuse? She just had to sweet talk you, and you're gone. So, in this age, this becomes a big trial. It's lust. Becomes a very big trial. And becomes even more complicated because the woman want to become independent. They don't want to be subjected. They want to take some degrees, some profession, and become independent. When they want to become independent, then they also want independence in managing their lives. Now when they get into a marriage, they are sort of controlled. They're controlled, they're locked up. They can't enjoy the type of freedom that they used to enjoy. Now then their minds begin to work. Say, well, we're earning money, we've got our independence, why should we tie ourselves up? We can move around, we can enjoy. There's a variety we can choose. We wish to be here today with this person, here with that person. Why can't we do this? So their minds begin to work. So that is why this thing becomes even more complicated when they have got their independence. Before, when she didn't have her independence and she was at home, right? Then the chances for her slipping into evil were less. I don't say that there wasn't any possibility of the girl slipping into evil, but the chances for her slipping into evil were less. But now when she's got her independence, she's driving, she's got a car of her own, she's got a flat of her own, everything of her own, now what stops her? What stops her to get into wrong? So this area, we need to be very careful, explain the different ways, different areas, how you can get caught up. We want the good things of life, right? The good things of life are in like malls and these type of more glorified places, more sophisticated places, you'll get the good things, the better things. But then there is a greater level of evil also in these places. Whether you're just going for an ice cream, just going for an outing, going for something to buy, but the temptation and the wrong in these places are even greater. The music is blasting, women are dressed up in any way that they want, right? And everything is carrying on. Now you're going for one intention, and then what do you come back with? So I say, buy, take something inferior, pay a little bit better price for it, but buy it from the corner shop. At the corner shop, the possibility of getting into wrong may be far less than in the mall and these very well done up places. Places that are very well done up. And now I have to tell the people that even when you're going for Umrah or Hajj, that it's not an outing, it's not a joyride. You didn't come for an entertainment, not an entertainment park. You came for something else. So conscientize yourself all the time, whether you're in Tawaf, whether you're in the hotel, whether you're in the hotel foyer, it's meals time, whatever it is. But look after yourself. You've paid so much and you came to this place for what you came. You came for this. So in these places where there's better opportunities, you have to be even more careful, very, very careful, very, very careful. You've got a teacher and a student relationship. How careful you need to be. Or teachers amongst themselves, whether it's a government school or a so-called Islamic school, right? When you got co-ed there, right? Co-ed, or you got female teachers as well. In the whole structure, you got female teachers as well. And how careful you need to be. In one school, so there was this type of a practice that was going on. So it was brought to the head, Islamic school, it was brought to the head. Okay, this is the behavior that's carrying on. And both the people are married, and this type of relationship is carrying on. Someone snapped it as well and showed it to the head. So the head said, see, this is mutual consent. They did with consent. They're consenting. Consenting partners now. It wasn't rape, it was consenting. So when it was consenting, then we shouldn't be speaking out against it. We shouldn't be speaking out loud. Now the head of the school is saying this, that it was consenting. So I said, all right, if you say that, if just that consenting makes this thing here legal, makes it right and permissible, tomorrow, if your wife or your daughter she starts off with a garden boy, and both are consenting, you mustn't take objection. It's a garden boy, whoever they are, right? And she's agreed with him, and he's agreed with her, and they're doing whatever they need to do. So you mustn't take objection to that. So no, I don't allow that. My daughter or my wife, she can't do that. Then why the double standards? Here you said consenting, it's all right. And here, when it's your own daughter, it's your own wife, and they did it with consent. They didn't force one over the other. Right? So you must be happy with this as well. So this is one area that we need to be very careful. The other area of lust that you need to be very careful, I showed you the different ways, right? Different ways. And how shaitan works. Yesterday I told you, yesterday the day before, how the person wanted to kiss that camel, what he did. So Shaitan will put all type of ideas, this is how you must do it, plan it like this, you'll get around like this, and you can get your, you get your stuff. The other is, when it's attractive boys, right? Boys are some attraction. Now, this becomes even more dangerous. And the reason why it becomes more dangerous is because to speak freely to a girl is a little bit difficult. You got a beard, you got a turban, whatever. You got all these things here. Now, on the street to talk to a girl, is it easy? It's a little bit difficult. You're a little bit considerate about the fact that you got a turban, you got a kurta, you got a topi. You take cognizance of these things here. So you're a little bit careful about this thing. But that is when there is a girl. But to talk to a boy, it's easy to talk to a boy, isn't it? Nobody thinks that, hey, what are they up to? Do people just think that they, what they're up to? So to build up a relationship with a beardless boy, it's much more easier. To get into it is much more easier. Right? And khuda na khasta, Allah pak forbid, you know, is such a dangerous thing, they say, that when a person gets into this, he experiments this, he gets into this and he experiments this, then even at his old age, these things won't leave him. These tendencies won't leave him. He's got that tendency now, and he gets that satisfaction through that, talking to them, or being a little bit more considerate, looking at them, and looking at them with a passion, looking at them with temptation, and this doesn't leave him. And he carries on. And yet, his piety is still preserved, because nobody feels that he's doing anything that is impious. Nobody thinks that he's doing anything that is haram. He's just talking. Now what's happening in his heart, Allah Pak knows. What is happening in the secret, Allah Pak knows. And it's so easy to get this done. See? There it was a girl, it was difficult to do it. Here it's a boy, then it's much easier to do it, to get that access to that boy than to get to that girl. So how much more careful and how much more caution you need to exercise when it's a boy. Now this will happen more at a school, at a university, at a madrasa, where there's a lot of interaction. You've got boys that are a little bit of age, and you've got young boys, beardless. So you've got both, and you are working with all. So the teacher has to be careful, the students have to be careful, have to be worried about. Now that's why, in the old days, then there used to be a system in the old days that beardless boys, they were asked to shave off their hair, or all shave off their hair. Thanabon, I think it was a weekly practice, every week you just cut off your hair. So when the child is cut off his hair, and he's asked not to dress up smart, you mustn't dress up in a smart clothing and cut off your shave off your hair, finish. Right? So now he looks like a mazamban. So there's no attraction. The attraction is gone, finish. So I say, you know, that the child that is cutting off his hair, really he's cooperating to the educational environment. Educational, you know, that whole educational surrounding, you're cooperating to it. But if you are dressed smart, you got long hair and you dress smart, obviously he doesn't have a beard. So there's a feminine look on the child. So when there's a feminine look now, instead of the child looking into the kitab, making mutala of the kitab, he's making mutala of the person. So the whole attention has been diverted. And I tell the youngsters, you know, that I am now approximately 44 years in an educational environment, from 71 till now. Right? So how long? 44 years, isn't it? And I found two, three things to be very disruptive. One is this. Person is interested, he's intelligent, everything. But he gets involved in this. Now his whole attention is diverted. At whichever age, and you get interested in this, you get caught up in this, your whole attention is disrupted. From what you're supposed to be doing, what you are supposed to be doing, what you must do, into something else. You think like that, you want that proximity with that person, you want that person to be around you, you feel comfortable under some pretext. If you are the, for example, you're making mutala for that group, or you're making takrar for the group, then you want, if this person also comes and sits next to me, you know, he looks intelligent. You know, intelligent people, if they get the concept, then it makes our work very much more easier. So you will give up that explanation for yourself, but dil ka chor, dil ka andar, Allah Ta'ala janta hai. So you want that person that is a little bit more attractive to sit around you, to speak to him, that you can look at him. So now, one great impediment is lust. Almost time someone says that one pious person, he passed away. And when he was being, when his whole hisab started, you know, whole accounting, the whole balance sheet is being put before Allah Ta'ala. Now this came up. You've been looking at some youngsters and you've been looking at them with lust, though you didn't touch them, but you looked at them with lust. Now he's so embarrassed. He says that the embarrassment I'm going through is worse than punishment, that you've been doing this. So one wants to know, he died as a mu'min, right? So he's not just dispatched for Jahannam. But this is that embarrassment that I'm going through, that Allah is asking me, you know, you've been doing this. It's so hurtful that it's worse than punishment. So in a classroom environment, in an environment like a madrasa, how much more precaution you need to exercise. Some of the methods of exercising precaution is that you don't call a youngster alone in the confines, in your room, in your privacy, you don't ever call them. Like I said, in the home, it's a working woman, so you don't. Here, in your privacy, they mustn't be. Admiral Tami Sahib Rahmatullahi, in order to impress upon the other Murideen, when they built up a room for him to do his tafsir, you know, Bayan al-Quran, then sometimes it happens that someone has to send some notes or something, you know, some message. So Mu'an made it clear that if there's any message that is to be conveyed to me, then don't send a beardless boy. Nafska kya tikana. Now, although Mu'an had no feeling, no tendencies, but in order to teach the rest of the Murids, okay, see, this type of person mustn't be sent to my private area. My private area, this person. Because people can have doubts. People's minds work in strange ways. And Mawlana, in my opinion, he was impressing upon the other students, you see, you take me as a senior, as your ustad, as your sheikh, so I'm so careful about this, then what level of precaution you need to exercise? So the precaution that is supposed to be taken in this cases, whether it's a beardless boy, whatever, it's supposed to be far more greater. Because, like I say, this thing is easy accessible and nobody feels different about it. So one is in your private area, right? One is for that beardless person to make any of your khidmat. It's a beardless boy, but he makes your khidmat now. He's passing you tea, or he's pressing your hand, pressing your leg now. How your mind can work? So don't take khidmat from them. Or you're sending him home for an errand, building up some type of additional affinity with this boy, don't do it with this person. Because now he's already in your home, and the next moment what's going to happen? Something else, some strange thing can happen. Yeah. And you may just say, you know, I'm giving you tawajjuh, embrace that boy, tawajjuh now. You'll do something strange then. Can't you do that? See, how shaitan can work. That person says, no, my ustad got so much of affection, you know. He gave me tawajjuh and all that he's doing. By the tawajjuh and something else. The tawajjuh is not for the right reasons, for something else. See? So don't experiment on this thing here. No personal khidmat. He mustn't come into the confine of your home. If he's in your class, for example, it's an amrad, and he's in your class, right? So if it's a student, the student must ask to be seated different. I don't want to be seated next to him. Because every now and then, you're seeing the person, nafs can get affected. So I need to be seated away from him. Right? the same will happen to the ustad. The ustad should sit him on the side so that his eyes don't fall on him. Because when the eyes don't fall on him, to kuch na kuch to namak hoga, or kuch na kuch thes aayega. Some taste will come. You can't say that you won't have any feeling. So why should you experiment? You put your hand onto the fire and say, let me experiment, I'm getting burnt or not. Don't get burnt, I'll carry on. You experiment, you don't experiment. It's not an area to experiment. Don't say, no, let me experiment if I got that feeling or not. So you don't start it off at all. Don't start it off at all. So in the class as well, don't keep him in front. Keep him on the side. That if you're teaching the class, then you don't have to look now. He's on the side, so you don't have to bend like turn around like this and check at him. You'll just look in front and complete your sabak and over, right? But you got him right in front. Now every time you're looking at him, every time the feelings are coming up again. The more you're looking at the person, and the more those feelings are coming up. So the easy, simple way is just keep him on the side. The story of Imam Muhammad Rahmatullah is quite popular. That Imam saw what degree of precaution he exercised. Now when these people exercise this degree of precaution, this is what gives that kamal to that ilm. When you see that kamal in that ilm, that kamal ilm is because of this. Is when they are in taqwa, then Allah Ta'ala elevates them. The understanding, the ilm, the ilmiyat all is elevated on account of the taqwa. Allah Ta'ala